So like 3 or 4 years ago, I got taken up on pretty serious charges from the Democratic Socialists of America.
I remember this.
Because, well, it's because I, you know, it's for ableism, because I use the word crazy. And they sort of took me to like a tribunal, and there was a...
Wait, this was right before the podcast started or right during the podcast?
This was, well, oh, this actually did happen. Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. Because I remember when this was happening. Oh, wait, were we supposed to pretend this didn't happen?
Well... But yes, I did. It was on charge. I didn't actually get in trouble. That's the thing. I did get in a little bit of trouble, and I got called trans misogynoir.
I like the way you just said that.
I mean, I was crazy to hear it, but they took me to a like a restorative justice thing, and this is pre-COVID. This bemasked individual got up and started lecturing me about ableism and slurs and all these kind of things. And, of course, I'm sitting back, straddling a chair like this, wearing sunglasses, sure. No shirt, flicking my tongue out occasionally in a, frankly, a lewd motion.
Sure.
Just, it's a nervous
check out my manspreading, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I stunk, too, on purpose. Sure. I smelled like shit. Yeah. And
well,
of
you
got to
stink it up.
I stunk it up, and I'm not wearing shoes.
Yeah. You got to take up space.
Oh, well, I was cool, because that's the other thing, too, is I gained a lot before this, too. I bulked for it.
Sure.
So I was like 250, 260.
Yeah, bloated out.
Oh, my God. Pure bread diet. And I'm sitting there, and this fucking lady is, you know, oh, you can't say this. Oh, you can't say that. I'm like, I can do whatever I want. You don't understand. I'm about to be a podcast superstar. And she was like, podcasts, those should be fucking illegal. And I'm like, God doesn't want them to be illegal, or else he wouldn't have invented them. And then she says, God isn't real. And so, Liz, this chick gets up on a fucking box, and she's like, all right, Comrade Brace, if God is real, he'll knock me off this box in the next 15 minutes. And you know what I did? I sat back there, ate a full pan of cornbread, smoked a Camel Wide.
Because you were feeling wide.
I was feeling wide. And yeah. I did a little bit of cocaine. And I watched her, and she stood there in silence, masked, crying, of course. And after that 15 minutes was up, I got up. And I did a crazy roundhouse kick, knocking her out of a window. Unfortunately, second floor, fell out. She perished due to being run over by a city bus, which we support because it's a public service. And I look down at the window and I say, she's like, why did you do that? I said, God is busy protecting our podcasters. And so he sent me down here to deal with you.
That's a terrible story. See, what you got to do is when you fall out a window, you got to land on the bus, and then you somersault, and then you get up. And then, you know, the person who pushed you, or in this case kicked you out the window, is looking down at you, and you go like, ha-ha! And then you just see the number of the bus, which you didn't know until this moment was actually on top of the bus.
Yes. They have
the numbers. And then you just very quickly scurry away, jump off the top of the bus.
If I was her, I would have drawn on me and fired. That was her main thing that she did wrong.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
My name is Liz.
My name is Brace. We, of course, joined by producer Young Chomsky, and the podcast is called?
Turn On. Hello.
Hello. I actually did get in trouble for, I didn't say crazy, I said another.
Non-slur.
It's not a slur, no, but I said a word that describes people with.
Which one? We can bleep it. Insane?
I said f***ed.
You did?
Yeah, and people got all mad at me. Yeah. But you know what? I expended a lot of social capital, and I came out on top.
Well, remains to be seen.
Anyways, we are recording live. We have with us here today one of Liz's old professors from college. Little do you know that the reason the podcast is so successful is because Liz went to business school.
Yeah. And we are fully funded by the state of Israel.
we have with us today, Shy David Dye.
I just want to say that as I was taking in all of the ruckus that's been going on at our dear Ivy Leagues, as I was trying to make sense of the discourse, I want to say it was a little tough for us. As, you know, for our, you know, fans listening, they'll know what I'm talking about. As lovers of the NBA and haters of the state of Israel, this has been a difficult discourse to make sense of. You know, you're sort of like, which Shy are we talking about here? When people are saying all this shit, you don't know if we're talking about the NBA player or this crazy guy from Colombia.
Yeah.
But...
Is that convincing?
Oh, my God. Still. It will be my project to get you into this, I promise. You missed a great Knicks game.
Great Knicks game.
Great Knicks game last night. Really memorable.
Damn it.
Oh, my God. Just zero interest.
I'm trying, dude.
You're not really trying.
God, this reminds me of so many relationships I've been in. I am fucking trying. I'm fucking trying to have your interest, okay?
No.
I'm fucking trying.
I'm fucking trying.
I'm fucking trying. I love you!
Okay, we are not talking about the protests at Ivy League campuses and other campuses of non-Ivy Leagues across the nation, though we should say solidarity with protesters. But we are indeed talking about a war.
We're talking about the Ivy League.
No.
Okay.
What are you, Drake?
Retiring. I was trying to do a Jamaican accent, and for those listening, there are white Jamaicans, and that's what I was imitating. I was trying to do a Jamaican accent because Babylon kind of plays into this a little bit. Babylon. Okay. I can't really do it. We're talking about, Liz, we're talking about
the most ancient of wars.
The most ancient of wars. The wars between... Well, who are you referring to there?
I don't know. I'm talking about the Holy War.
The Holy War. The Holy War.
There's a Holy War happening.
There is a whole lot of war happening. we are talking a little bit about God. And this is hard for me because obviously a lot of people know here, I know God. I kind of came up with him.
Her.
Well, yeah, with her. And, you know, obviously we had a falling out due to the creation of Christianity and Islam, but hopefully looking to mend things. And as part of that, we're talking about red heifers and we're talking about maybe the end of the world today.
I do want to say real quick, outside of the red heifers, I really love cows.
You do love cows.
I am a big fan of cows. I was just about to say, I'm always talking about cows, but I really am always talking about cows. Mm-hmm. I love their big faces, their
you
big
too.
Heads.
Yeah.
I fell in love with a cow at a very young age, and it has always stuck with me.
Me too. And let me tell you, the divorce process was
don't
tough.
Don't do it. Just stop.
I'm going to do a lot of that today.
But I just want to say, I am a friend to all cows. And this red heifer business makes me a little bit uncomfortable.
I want to say I watched some Israeli man on the street interviews where like a guy went around like asking Israelis what they thought of the red heifer the burning thing. First of all, literally none of them knew about it.
Well, that's good.
And second of all, the ones that did were like, wait, they're going to burn the cows? Mm. Like they themselves were like, I don't think this plays well with even the general Israeli public.
Yeah. Well, don't tell them how, you know,
what's happening in Gaza. Exactly. Processed. Yeah. Well, maybe that cow's a little bit more. So God does not like cows. In fact, God hated for a time almost all animals and wished them to burn so that their essences could be transferred and increase his divine power. Take Genesis 22, for example.
My favorite Genesis.
Oh, it's an excellent record. God tells Abraham, who is an early religion goat, I gotta say. He was one of the top guys. He's like, Abraham, you gotta sacrifice your son, Isaac, on an altar. Abraham's like, all right, I'll take Isaac. He's like, takes Isaac to this altar, lays some wood all over Isaac's puny little body. He's like, trying to get the matches to work. He's like, fucking with the lighter. Isaac's like, what are you doing? We usually burn a sheep, don't we, Daddy? Like, oh, am I a sheep to you, Daddy? Abraham says like, yeah, just chill, just lie there. And then as he's about to set his son on fire, an angel calls him up on his phone from heaven and says, hold up, we were just playing. Mm. You got punked. But we now know you actually do fuck with God heavy.
Yeah, classic punking. Classic God punking.
Abraham is like, what? He looks up. His son is like naked, covered in oil, wood chips, etc. But behind his son, he sees a ram stuck in a thicket that just appeared because God put his ass there. He's like, Isaac, get your fucking funky ass up. We're burning this ram. And so they slaughter that ram and burn it, and its essence is transferred to God in a burnt offering, which makes God more powerful.
I love this because I do want to say for our listeners at home, Brace has turned the chair around and is sort of straddling it, and his hat is on backwards.
Oh, yeah.
And he's talking real cool, real slick.
About the Bible. Well, people don't know this about me, but I'm one of the most religious men in America.
I'm always saying that.
I am really scared of going to hell, so I do all sorts of stuff to make sure I get into heaven. So I think they actually did this at the site of the Temple Mount. I mean, it's unclear exactly. And, you know, in fact, it may not have even happened at all, but I say it did. But back then, people burned all kinds of shit, which is crazy because you think of everyone being really hungry until like the 70s. And so like you don't really have like a lot of excess shit to burn. But you know, you're supposed to slaughter a lamb for Passover, Young Chomsky.
You put lamb's blood on the
Yeah, but that's like door. Now. That's like the symbolic one. But well, they used
how do you get the blood?
Well, they slaughter but you're supposed to slaughter and burn the lamb, like on an altar. But they don't do that no more. I do go up. I will say this. Yesterday, me and a bunch of Hasidic guys did go up to fucking Hudson, and we just took some guns out and we shot people's sheep on their farms.
That's not nice.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's nice, but it did get us closer to God. But, you know, they used to burn all these different animals. It was different animals for different holidays. The Old Testament also, which is the only Old Testament, features a bunch of rituals around cleanliness. This is like, you know, the Leviticus kind of shit where they're like talking about, oh, you can eat these animals, no cloven hoof guys or whatever, no shellfish.
Mixed fibers.
Mixed fiber. All the Jew rules that they did.
That's a good one.
I think Christians do Christians do some of them too?
No.
I don't, yeah.
That's
I don't,
the point of the New Testament.
They don't have to do any of them. I don't think, but they handle snakes? I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I guess the New Testament supplanted all this. You know, Leviticus 15 warns against unusual discharges from a funky nut from your penis or even leftover nut from the classic regular fucking experience. They're like, do not mess around with that. Obviously, this is also where the stuff around women having to sleep in the chicken coop on the period does, which, of course, my family, still believers in the old ways, practices to this day. In Numbers 19... the process described for ritually cleansing oneself after contact with a corpse is described. You're supposed to take a red heifer. It's a cow. That is. I know.
Cow corner over there.
I'm just saying.
A cow head over here.
I am a cow head.
You take a red heifer.
Cow.
You, Liz, don't listen to this part. You kill the cow. And then you burn it alongside cedar wood, hyssop, and scarlet wool.
Well, hyssop, that's something you don't hear.
Doesn't this seem like the kind of stuff you'd buy like in an apothecary? This is my little apothecary.
Yeah.
So this is the ritual law God has commanded. Instruct the Israelite people to bring you a red cow without blemish, in which there is no defect, in which no yoke has been laid. The ashes can then be used to purify people. Now, these sacrifices were performed at the temple. Not just any temple, not that the little temple in Great Neck, Long Island, but the temple in Jerusalem. The problem is, there isn't a temple anymore.
No.
The first one got destroyed by, Liz, I think I have to have you pronounce this.
The Babylonians?
That's not what I meant. Nebuchadnezzar! In 586. Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians destroyed the temple. I cannot do the Jamaican accent.
I don't know why you insist on doing it.
I'm not doing one. That's just how I talk.
That's just how you say Babylonians.
Just how I say Babylonians because of what I was raised doing. 586, they famously destroy the first temple. For some reason, Nebuchadnezzar saw all of these Mina baddies, these Jewesses, and he's like, ooh, you all are so fine. I'm going to take as many Jews as I can to Babylon. And he takes all these Jews to Babylon, blah, 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 blah. Babylon gets smoked by the motherfucking Persians. Jews go back to Jerusalem. They build the second temple. They start doing all these motherfucking war sacrifices there, maybe selling some trinkets, maybe selling some goods, maybe doing a little foreign exchange trading, which is not maybe so not a crime, but some people view it as to do it. And even maybe it's the nicest building in Jerusalem, until this little guy named Jesus. Sorry, this part's hard for me. Named Jesus comes and spits in the face of everything that came before him and kicks the FX traders out of the temple. And look what good that did him. Look what good that did him. He is disposed of in a way that I think is not okay, but some people at the time did. And then he comes back, they say. And then Judaism kind of did not do so well after that. The Romans tore down the second temple. And that is what started modern Judaism, which is basically a Judaism defined by exile, by loss, by the metaphysical. It became like a lot more like, well, maybe the temple is like, you know, wherever you want the temple to be. Judaism shifted eventually many of its practices from what it's called temple Judaism. For instance, there's like no more animal sacrifices. They do the lamb's blood on the plate and shit like this. And there's always been this thing that the third temple will be rebuilt when the Messiah comes. Because the thing is with Jews, we're like, there hasn't, no, he wasn't the Messiah, but I kind of think maybe he was, I don't know. But even if he was, not, I'm still Jewish, I'm not going to go for him. Even if that guy is the Son of God, I'm still going to pretend like there's another Messiah coming. I'm not giving them that. But our whole thing is that there's going to be another Messiah. We don't really believe this, but some people do. That there's going to be another Messiah that comes, and then that the third temple will be built, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So.
I thought that was – you did a really good job there explaining all that.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed that. I realized we didn't really explain
– Oh, what we're talking about.
What we're talking about. But I think that's okay because we're going to do it right now, which is that we've talked in the past about this kind of, and I'm going to say it, unholy alliance mm-hmm. between insane right-wing Zionist Israelis
uh-huh.
and the American evangelical movement.
Yes.
And the strange bedfellows that they've made and how that's kind of come together. This we haven't talked about. In this messianic, plight to bring about the third temple.
And?
Sacrifice the cow.
And?
Bring on the Antichrist.
And?
Which will bring on the real Christ.
And bring on the apocalypse.
In the final battle of Armageddon. Now, this sounds insane, and it is, and yet is actually surprisingly mainstream
mm-hmm.
in, like, in American right-wing circles, and increasingly in powerful circles in Israel.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, a lot of people note that American, like, evangelicals are, like, more supportive of Israel
mm-hmm.
than, like— In some ways than like some American Jews are. Like
I think that's
like
true.
The biggest base.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
This particular thing like really exemplifies that special relationship.
Yeah. And so much so that even like this is so not mainstream that even the leader of Hamas has cited
yeah.
this, you know, this movement to rebuild or build the third temple as a reason for as one of the big reasons for the October 7th attack.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's mentioned in their, like, little 16-page explanatory booklet they put out afterwards, like, not the Red Heifers in particular, but the destruction of Al-Aqsa and the theoretical building of the third temple there.
So we got to kind of, like, trace all of this because as bizarre and weird and you know, millenarian and messianic as it is, it does have a lot more purchase than I think any of us should feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
And we kind of have to trace a bunch of stuff in order to kind of make sense of all of this. So to start, We're going to be jumping around the timeline a lot here, going all the way back into, you know, like 50, 60, 70 AD.
Done with the rock. We're talking about, that's the first rock where God was like, oh, fuck, this gives me a great idea to build everything else.
But to start, we're going to, I'm going to go to my favorite decade, which is the 90s.
The 1990s. Okay, not just the 90s.
And I want to talk about the 1995 Jerusalem Act, which kind of kicked off some of the stuff that we're going to talk about. This was the controversial act that designated Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. It was passed by Congress and made a law without the president actually signing it, which this sounds very stupid. I felt very Schoolhouse Rock about this. Didn't realize that could happen.
But I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will. But today I am still just a bill.
But it was so controversial that Clinton didn't even want to sign it and have his name on it. And that's because it said that, you know, Jerusalem will be undivided and we're going to move the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem because this is Israel. It's nothing else. This is Israel. We're like planting a flag and that's going to happen. Okay, this was in the 90s. And basically every president, including Clinton, who, again, declined to sign the bill into law, didn't even want to touch it because it was such a like hot potato to align yourself with this thing. Funny enough, every candidate would, campaign on it and say, oh, we're gonna move the embassy, we're going to move the embassy. But then when it came to them being in office, whether it was Clinton, whether it was Bush, whether it was Obama, they would sign a waiver to just sort of extend it every 6 months under, like, national security.
Yeah,
they would
be like,
No. No one needs to touch this for 6 months. We would, you know, let's That's just delay this until— Of course, famously, everyone remembers Donald Trump comes into office. And I got to say, like, I don't think that Donald Trump personally cares that much, but he was elected on the back of the American evangelical movement, much like a lot of right-wing presidents. And he was like, I'm going to do them a solid. We're going to finally move this embassy to Jerusalem.
That's the funny thing I see people sort of like— just on, like, morons online talking about, like, well, I don't know if, like, Trump actually might be better on Israel than Biden. They're both going to be bad. Like, Trump did this. This is not, like, a small thing that happened. Like, this was something that had been basically put off for a reason.
Yeah.
It does really inflame tensions in a crazy fucking way. And it's, like, goes against the UN.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like, even when he said he was going to do it, they still had to wait a year and a half before they actually could move the embassy because they were, I mean, literally the State Department, everyone under Trump was going back and forth figuring out, like, if they could really do this because of how controversial moving the embassy there would be.
And this is like a really big, this is kind of a big deal in Israel as well. Because as you'll see, like, you know, throughout this episode, especially later on when we're talking about the Temple Mount itself, a lot of Israelis are focused on this concept of Israeli sovereignty over Jerusalem.
Yes.
And over the ancient lands of Judea and Samaria. It is something that is like a major, not just like force on the Israeli right, but on like the Israeli political mainstream, which is in general pretty right wing. Mm-hmm. But it is like, it is something that cannot be stressed enough that this was an important fucking chapter in Israel's history is us backing them up with this.
Yeah, totally. So this was a big win for, again, the Christian, the crazy evangelical right wing that elected Trump. And we should talk a little bit about where some of these ideas come from in the Christian tradition, because a lot of them actually predate Israeli Zionism, which is very weird.
Yeah.
So if we can go back and see some of these ideas in, like, kind of, early Protestant sects, you know, kind of Calvinist sects, in as, like, early as, like, the 16th century in Europe— there was, you know, at the start of the Reformation, you know, that kind of inspired a ton of new readings of the Bible and a ton of new interpretations of kind of Christian eschatology. And from there, you get new ideas about basically the role of Jewish people alongside all of the kind of fire and brimstone fever of the kind of these sort of Protestant movements, leading to a lot of early calls for the return of Jews to the Holy Land. So for these early movements, you know, the obsession with the rapture led to trying to figure out how to bring about the rapture, mm-hmm. because that's what they wanted, which led to Protestants supporting the Jewish return to Israel because to them, that's part of the lore in bringing about the rapture.
Yeah, it is interesting because I'm like, shouldn't like the rapture, my whole thing with this is, listen, I want the rapture as much as anybody.
I
want to get all these fucking Christians out of here so we Jews can do whatever we want. That it is our world now. We can finally make Hollywood good again. But you don't want the rapture?
No.
You don't think you'd go?
It just sounds like annoying.
It does sound annoying. Because you know some people you don't like would be raptured. And you'd be like, oh, okay, I'm still here. But like, my thing is, like, shouldn't the rapture kind of come about more naturally? Like, it feels like cheating to try to do the, like, kickstart the rapture itself. Like, it's like yourself, like it's an alchemical process or something. Or a chemical process.
Yeah, I agree. But for all these people, this is, you know, this was their, this is what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Orchestrate the hastening of this as a way of fulfilling God's plan.
Also gets the Jews out of there.
Well, so in America, as all these kind of Protestant movements, you know, came over to America, all of these ideas obviously mix, you know, great revivalism with small business owner American entrepreneurialism, and we have the birth of American evangelicalism, aka crazy Pentecostal, crazy pants people.
God's not dead; He's truly alive.
That's keep going. Yeah, keep going.
I know that's the only part I know of it. It's a really good song, though. I got really into watching this is, I think, pre even me knowing about Bieber's connection, all this stuff. But like Hillsong YouTube mm-hmm. videos, like mm-hmm. their music. I'm fascinated by that kind of
sure.
stuff. I think I told you, I went to a like a Bieber-style hipster church service mm-hmm. in L.A. a few years ago. It was incredible.
How extreme were they?
They were like, all right, the guy was like 50 and he was dressed like Justin Bieber
sure,
and like speaking in sort of a, I will say, if you found my Jamaican accent offensive, then you would certainly not like the way that this 50-year-old and according to former, or to older pictures, formerly very straight-laced white man spoke. Mm. Because let me tell you, it was A-A-V-E. Mm-hmm. That is how you pronounce it. It was incredible. But I was shocked to find out that Christians got to give 10% of their money to the church.
Tithing. Yeah.
I'm like, that's a little greedy.
How do you think the church sustains itself?
I don't know. God? It just seemed like a little crazy. It was like 10%. And they were also selling hoodies for like $75. It was like, and they were selling like sweatpants and five panel hats or whatever. I actually don't know what that is, I don't think, but like the hipster hat.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean the flat brim?
Like the ones they sell like—
Or do you mean a dad hat?
Like a coffee shop's, like a hipster coffee shop sells these kind of hats. I don't know, like—
Is it flat or is it—
It's
Does it
not,
look like the one you wear?
It's not like that one.
Okay.
No. The ATF hat is just a classic baseball hat. It's like paneled. You know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
Is that paneled?
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
like that, though. They were more structured than that. Anyways, they were hats. They were selling for a lot of money as well.
Okay. I want to get back to the evangelicals. So their support, American evangelical support for Israel actually— Oh, my God.
Jeez, sorry. I don't know how that happened.
American evangelical support for Israel crystallizes kind of around the 1967 war. Okay? So we're jumping in the timeline a bit. But we're not here to do total religious history. It's important to understand that the American New Right, in the wake of the Goldwater defeat, didn't really know what to do. They were kind of in shambles. They were unpopular. They were lame. They were losers because they were racist. No young people didn't like them. You know, all this stuff, they couldn't get really far. And so they were looking for basically how could they organize and organize quickly. And so they turned to church networks, which were, you know, these incredible civil society networks that were offering kind of untapped resource for organizing throughout America. And I know it sounds weird, but the evangelicals at this point weren't really that – I mean, they were political, but not really. Not in a way that we would understand now.
Uh-huh.
They also were – I mean, and this should come as no surprise – not a big fan of Jews.
What? Of us?
They were famously extremely anti-Semitic.
Of Jews?
You know, they were a big fan of the whole, you know, Jews killed Jesus narrative.
Well – okay. Like, you've never – I'm sorry. Yes. Digression real quick, though. Let me say one thing about this.
We don't need to.
Yes, we killed Jesus. First of all, my bad or whatever. You know, I'm sorry. I'll take accountability. We'll take accountability for that. But second of all, killing Jesus led to Jesus coming back, which led to your religion rising and led to you taking 10% at this church in LA. So you're mad at us for doing the thing that made you have a religion. Just well, seems a little funny logic to me.
So it wasn't just that. I mean, look, they also – it was, you know, they hated Catholics, fair, any non-strict Protestants,
okay,
Jews, everyone, all damned to hell. Not going to heaven in the evangelical view, right?
Yeah.
Politically, they did not like the relationship at all between Israel and America.
Interesting.
For that reason, right? Literally because they were anti-Semites.
Yeah.
Now, the right wing had an issue with that. They weren't able to kind of get a lot of this stuff going until they were able to recruit a little man named Jerry Falwell to head up the Moral Majority in 1979. This is a pretty big deal. And, you know, there's been lots of books, lots of all this stuff about this moment, but this is a major turning point in the American conservative evangelical Zionist nexus, because Falwell had a different view, right? And he was kind of crucial in organizing and recruiting the evangelical network into the Republican Party. Some of that was due to the Republicans kind of rebranding. You had Reagan. Some of this was evangelical recruiting. And all of this did play a really big role in getting Reagan himself elected. So this is from Falwell's 1981, The Fundamentalist Phenomenon. And he says, "To stand against Israel is to stand against God. We believe that history and scripture prove that God deals with nations in relation to how they deal with Israel." And this sounds, I mean, to me at least, this sounds pretty much in line with anything that you've heard from any mainstream American Republican for the past 35 years.
I mean, this sounds like Glenn Beck or like fucking Mike Johnson or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
remember this is Mike Pence?
Yeah, exactly.
Not to mention George Bush. You know what I mean? Like, this is all pretty mainstream now. And this comes from what's called dispensational theology, which is, again, really popular now, but it wasn't for a long time. This is the Pentecostals. These are the Baptists, the American Independent Bible Churches, the Charismatics, the people who speak in tongues. These are the crazies.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to – well, no offense. You're crazy. If, you know.
See, we Jews just kiss and tongue.
They're all mildly Calvinistic, you know, the high view of the sovereignty of God.
Uh-huh.
And this is the interpretation of the Bible that organizes history and the Bible into different periods, dispensations, in order to work out God's plan for mankind, okay? And so for them, the whole of history is distinct epochs where God is doing – it's so funny because ever since we had that conversation about epic versus epoch, it like – I pause in my brain every time. It drives me crazy. I'm sorry. This is the whole of history is these distinct epochs where God is doing specific things that then each unfold according to his plan.
Interesting.
And he's governing, you know, the world in a specific way during each specific time, right? This is different than other readings of the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very, very literal reading of the Bible. Now, there are seven of those dispensations, which we don't need to get into, but for our purposes, the final one is called the Millennial Kingdom.
Oh, God, I'd hate that.
I know.
Was Lena Dunham in charge of it?
Insert avocado toast joke.
Exactly.
Insert,
I'm sorry. You go to hell if you make your espresso wrong?
Mm-hmm. God's a girl boss, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, I get it.
But this is the second coming of Jesus Christ that we were talking about.
Yes. Oh, he's going to be pissed at us, dude.
At which point he will take the throne of David, okay, rule the earth for 1,000 years. My question is, what happens after that 1,000 years? But I don't know if anyone's
going to work. Is Jesus Christ 1,000-year Reich?
But it's all in order to fulfill the promises that God has made to Israel, okay? Now, as we talked about, that's after the rapture.
Yeah.
Which is when Christ comes to earth with an army to punish the unbelievers, destroy the forces of the Antichrist who's already there.
Yeah, who's yes.
In the final battle of Armageddon.
And I think the Antichrist is ruling from a temple in Jerusalem.
Yes.
Like, he's like, I am Christ, but evil.
Yeah. He's Christ's double.
Yeah.
And he's Jewish.
He's nasty Christ. Oh, he's Jewish.
Well, to the evangelicals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Christ is, I mean, he might have strayed a little bit, but he was Jewish too.
No, but yeah.
But he's like, I'm Jewish.
I think, yeah, to them, yes.
Hello!
Which is part
of
why—
I'm the Antichrist!
They're
Perhaps I shall raise an army! Maybe I will fight the real Christ! Who's to say that—
I don't think this
Who's to say that he's the real Christ? Maybe I am. You don't know.
This would be a very cute 1970s movie, like double movie.
Yes, it really would. My thing is with the Antichrist is, and the Christian view of this stuff.
What is your thing with the Antichrist?
My thing is, all right, so the Christians are like, the Antichrist makes a deal with the Jews. And I gotta tell you.
Well, it's, no. It's unclear. I think this is what the Christians think, is that the Antichrist is already here.
Yeah.
He's among us.
Barack Obama.
What?
Barack Obama.
Well, no, perhaps.
Perhaps. Maybe.
But I feel like kind of fell off.
Yeah.
But he's got to rise to power, at which point then we'll know he is the Antichrist.
Do you think that it's me?
No, I don't think you're the Antichrist.
I mean, I
want to— Do you
want
to be the Antichrist?
No, but I'll do it if no one else is going to
do it. No, I think it's one of those things where you would know.
Aren't I technically Antichrist just by being Jewish?
No.
No disrespect to any Christians
out
there.
No, it's not like an anti-Dutch thing.
I'm not—
anti-Dutch. We should start anti-Dutch.
Anti-Dutch, yes.
That is the podcast. This is an anti-Dutch podcast.
This is. We're going, yeah, yes, yes it is. Except for their beautiful, delicious crunch bread. But it's like he maybe makes a deal. The Antichrist maybe makes a deal with us. It's unclear to me what he does. But my thing is, I'm like, do I have to fight in a war for or again? Because I'm like the evil guy. If the Antichrist comes back and people are like, he's gathering people, I'm like, well—
I think you just start following him.
But if that part of the prophecy is coming true, then I'd be like, well, fuck. Do you mean Jesus is going to come back? So
but
I'm going to hold out for Jesus.
Do you think that you would put it together? Because I think that they're banking on a lot of people not putting it together.
No, so, like, there's just a guy being like, hello?
Like, all this stuff is kind of happening, and we are, due to
like
modern convenience, we're like DoorDash. We're like Uber.
Yeah.
We're like
busy
with—
I'm too busy taking an Uber to realize it's the Antichrist.
Totally.
That happens, yeah.
Well, okay, they do say that in order for all of this to kind of unfold, like some things need to happen. And by they, I mean the Christians, the evangelicals. They say first, the Jews need to return to Israel.
No.
And that's because it's up to the Jews to bring about the Antichrist. So that's to the evangelicals, there's the Jewish Messiah who is a false prophet who will come. And that's the Antichrist that will occupy the third temple.
And so the Jews have to do this work for the Christians. The Jews are tired, y'all.
Well,
the Jews are fucking tired, y'all.
Yeah. Jerry Falwell says the Antichrist will portray himself as Christ, and that will necessitate his being a Jew.
Great.
So then it's during the final confrontation of Armageddon that the false prophet nation, aka Israel, gets finished off, and that only 140,000 Jews survive, and then Jesus takes the throne.
Okay, I definitely call one of the spots. But this is horrible.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. There was one Pentecostal red heifer cow breeder. Again, we're going to get to the cow. Who was profiled in the New Yorker in the 90s. His name was Clyde, which sounds like a
great cow name.
No, not the cow, the breeder.
Oh, well, great
Clyde
breeder name.
Clyde is both a great cow and a great Pentecostal name.
Yeah, it really is.
So Clyde said, it's very sad, but I would— – and Clyde is crazy, but I did find this quote very sensitive.
And his last name is Lott?
Yeah. But so Clyde said, it's very sad, but I would say the interest in the Christian world is to see the temple rebuilt from the Antichrist perspective, for the rapture, for the church. And that's a very selfish point of view. The very people that are advocating this are the ones that are very anti-Semitic in their feelings. But this is the guy who's, like, trying to provide the red cow to the whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he's also doing that, but he's like, I'm doing this in a woke way. Mm. Like, he's like, I'm bringing out the Antichrist.
This was the 90s. Wokeness wasn't here yet.
Yeah, that's true. He's like, I'm doing this in a pre-woke way.
Yeah. It was, you know, back then we called it politically correct.
Yeah, he's bringing about the Antichrist in a politically correct way.
So prior to the 1980s, prior to the rise of Jerry Falwell, the fundamentalist attitudes about Israel and the Jews was more of the classic, like, we should just convert them all to evangelical Christianity.
Good with me.
Yeah, we don't like them.
Let's do
it. Why don't we just get rid of Judaism? That was their kind of view.
Well, because, yeah.
And Falwell kind of, like, flipped the script on that. Part of this is because he became really good friends with Menachem Begin, the then prime minister of Israel. And that relationship changed the direction of both American evangelicalism and I think American Zionism, I think it's safe to say. This is from Begin. All proclaim to the city and the world that they are friends of Israel. Talking about the fundamentalists. They are sincere and devoted friends. We are very grateful to them. Israel has very strong enemies. Facts. And needs friends. Reverend Jerry Falwell is a very strong friend.
Well, Falwell was also, it should be noted, like a basically agent adjacent to the World Anti-Communism League. Too.
Yes.
Like he was all over the world setting up the enemies of the U.S.
Well, that's a really important point to bring in here because all of this kind of this shift and the kind of utilization of these evangelical networks was like on a specifically anti-communist bent.
Yeah.
I mean, and for those specific, reasons.
Yeah, because it should be, I mean, remember that Israel was on the quote unquote front lines of the Cold War during this period. Like the nations surrounding Israel were, I guess, not Egypt after a while under the traitor Sadat. But the other nations around Israel were seen as, or some of them, as like allies of the Soviet Union. And so like that Israel was like our 51st state there and like our fellow guys in the fight against communism.
Yeah, absolutely. And Falwell used that like as a way to kind of do away with the idea that the moral majority was anti-Semitic. Like this is a quote from him, the Soviet Union makes a terrible mistake in their harassment and persecution of Jews. And so it was a way of kind of flipping the script on that and, you know, making good allies in the region against the communists.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the New York Times in 1980. Israel is now giving special attention to cultivating evangelical Christians, many of whom defend the Israeli nation for biblical reasons. The tactic has deeply distressed some American Jewish supporters of Israel who regard the fundamentalist movement as anti-democratic and potentially anti-Semitic. The New York Times always very magnanimous.
Yes.
The ADL, we don't have to agree with everything they say. And actually, will you read this? Because I just...
Oh, because you can't do the voice.
I'm not doing
the
Jamaican voice.
You do the voice and the microphone is off.
I'm not doing the
Jamaican voice. You do the
voice
and the microphone is off. When we get off the phone with our manager, Mordechai, one name, like Cher.
I know, but I feel like it's a really good quote to do with that voice.
We don't have to agree with everything they say and do, ellipsis. The key thing here is you have a body of people who, for their reasons, are expressing their support.
It's the for their reasons that really
for their
got
reasons.
Me.
Hello, my name is Jonathan Greenblatt. It's a pleasure. You smell wonderful today.
Ugh,
Greenblatt probably wasn't the one saying this because he's a little too young.
I do want to point out before we move on to the Christians, I mean move on from the Christians because I'm getting sick and tired of talking about them, mm-hmm. is that Ronald Reagan himself believed the Battle of Armageddon would happen during his administration.
I don't want to fall asleep because I
So much so that about 100 mainstream Catholic, Protestant, and Jewish religious leaders signed a letter during his reelection campaign to get him to publicly denounce Armageddon theology because they were so afraid about, like, his, you know, like, melting brain and where it was going.
Yeah.
This is a quote from Reagan. Never in the time between the prophecies up until now has there been a time in which so many of the prophecies are coming together. This man sounds so much like Trump. It's crazy. Those two. There have been times in the past when people thought the end of the world was coming and so forth, but never anything like this. Which is a fucking crazy ass thing for a president to say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
especially
that's,
one that can start a nuclear war. I mean,
that's how I remember. Like the first time I ever came into contact with any of this stuff was during George W. Bush when he was president, and like reading articles talking about like his evangelical support and Republican support for Israel was predicated on this idea of like Armageddon.
Yeah,
and it always struck me as weird to make an alliance with these guys because I'm like, these guys want us to leave, like, desperately as part of, like, what they believe will bring back Jesus Christ, who's their main dude, is to get us all out of the nations that we're apparently so parasitic around and send us to Israel so that we bring about the Antichrist, which brings about the apocalypse, which sends most of us to hell or, I guess, convert to Christianity.
Yeah.
It just seems like not something that's good for the Jews. So I'll ask a question right now. What is currently...
That was...
You like that?
Yeah.
What is currently on the place of this destroyed Second Temple? So the Romans came here and in their fruity little Italian way destroyed the Second Temple, which God let happen because he hates the Jews because we killed his son. So currently there is a little something called Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Mm-hmm.
And you might be being like, doesn't that name sound motherfucking familiar? Well, it is if you've paid even a modicum of attention to Israel-Palestine stuff in your entire lifetime. But it's also was the name that Hamas, or excuse me, let me pronounce it the Israeli way, named their operation after on October 7th.
Mm.
So the Al-Aqsa Flood.
Right.
It is a very... important and fraught location. So it's located in Jerusalem and takes up a bunch of the old city of Jerusalem. So Jerusalem's in all these different sections, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, listen, ladies and gentlemen, you ever seen the picture of any politician in the history of your lifetime when they visit Israel, put on the funky little hat and make the little touch on the wall?
Mm.
That motherfucker is right next to it.
Yes.
It is like a big, essentially like Islamic worship complex. Like it's not just like there's Al-Aqsa Mosque, there's the Dome of the Rock, there's a bunch of shit on there, there's a bunch of different shrines. You know, this is, Jerusalem is like the city that God had an apartment in. You know, like it is the ancient city of all Abrahamic religions. And so there's shrines for essentially any kind of little flavor of Abrahamic religion you're into, you can find it in Jerusalem. But currently, and for the past like 1500 fucking years, it has been a Muslim holy site.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the third holiest site after Mecca and Medina. So pretty serious holy site. Like you said, it's more of a compound or a precinct than a single building. You've got, you know, classic historic gates, minarets, you've got the mosque, big shrine, and also the Dome of the Rock.
Mm-hmm. So that thing is a big old gold motherfucking dome,
mm-hmm.
and that contains the oldest rock ever. Mm-hmm. Basically, the rock that a lot of people think that, like, started the world or whatever. It's just a giant rock down there. I think different Abrahamic religions have kind of different interpretations of the rock. The one thing that I know to be true is that the Ark of the Covenant is rumored to be held underneath it. This is a gold chest that contains the two stone tablets that Moses brought from God. Now, I didn't want to say this on the podcast, but I have a plan.
Okay, stop.
I think we can get the Ark, but it's like there's a complex, there's tunnels underneath it.
Mm.
It is, you know, it was, I think it's also where like Muhammad ascended to heaven.
Yes, that's, for Muslims, that's exactly what they believe is housed there. I mean, like, there's like, it's a, you know, major site for Islamic pilgrimage. It's, you can't really like underrate how the like significance of this place.
I mean, they got Mecca, like that's their big guy,
mm-hmm.
but this guy is pretty close.
Yeah.
And like they've been rocking with Al-Aqsa for a long fucking time.
Yeah. Like 15 centuries.
But like, so imagine like there's kind of like this raised thing and that's where like the mosque compound is. And then on the side of that is the Western Wall, or AKA the Wailing Wall,
mm-hmm.
which is one of the Jewish people's holiest motherfucking sites.
And then like kind of next to that, in the arena, you have one of the oldest Christian sites as well, where Jesus was famously killed.
Oh.
Then resurrected at the end of the Via Dolorosa.
Okay.
At the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
So you got every – there. First of all, where's the representation for Baha'i?
they get all the – it's all there for them.
Is that what Baha'i is?
It's all of them.
I've always kind of been like Baha'i. Okay. I used to go to –
I did learn about it once and –
events in a Baha'i center, and I did in the Mission San Francisco, and they had a really nice drinking fountain.
That's
but I
nice.
Could never really figure out. They had a pretty big center too. I could never really figure out who was rocking there though. All right, so despite international law prohibiting the annexation and continued Israeli occupation of East Jerusalem, Israel has continued to make claims over the entire city, including the Al-Aqsa compound and the Old City. So, all right. 67 war, which is a very important event for basically all the stuff concerned here. Israel begins occupying East Jerusalem, and the western half had been captured since 1948. Now, Israeli control of Jerusalem is not recognized by international community, which doesn't actually really mean anything in practice.
Well, clearly, because they've been just controlling
exactly.
it.
Like this is Israel really puts the lie to a lot of international law because they just do things, and then like there's very little way to actually combat that because they have the backing of the U.S. and a lot of large Western European nations.
Mm-hmm.
However, control of Al-Aqsa, because this is the Israelis were like, we understand this is a little. It's a perhaps explosive situation. It was actually handed over to the Jordanians, the Hashemite monarchy, after the 67 war. So during the war, Israel occupied the compound for a little while. I think there was paratroopers stationed there. But afterwards, they're like, oh, this is too fraught for us to even like take direct control of. So the way that it's set up is that the Jordanians essentially like administer the compound, like they like do repairs and they're like kind of in charge of it in many ways. But Israel has full security control, which we'll get to in a little bit. And there's a very complicated and it seems like increasingly tough relationship between those two forces.
Yes.
For as much as Jordan will do anything that Israel wants, they Al-Aqsa is a tough nut to crack. So the way it is now is there's a status quo, and it's referred to as the status quo.
Yeah, it's basically just like a bunch of handshake agreements
it
about
really
how
is.
This, like the holiest of holy sites in the history of the world will be jointly controlled and managed. It's just like a bunch of like kind of old families giving each other like wink, wink, nod, nod agreement over like millennia.
Yeah, so like again, it's
nuts,
insane.
Dude.
So like Muslims are allowed to in theory, Muslims are allowed access there as a holy site. They can pray there. They can do services there, all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
It is like a Muslim holy site. Those are the people who kind of get the most access to it. Jews and Israelis and foreign tourists are allowed to visit legally in through one gate. There's like I think like 9 gates total. 8 are just for Muslims. 1 is for non-Muslims. But Jews are not allowed to pray there. I'm frankly not sure, and I'm not familiar enough with Jewish theology to understand if we're allowed to pray there anyways because there isn't a third temple there. And I know that like a lot of very like ultra-Orthodox Jews in Israel are like, we can't go there at all even to visit.
Right.
But it is technically, for the most part, the status quo is supposed to be that Jews are not allowed to pray there. Now, as we'll see, that status quo is not always upheld, but that is how it's supposed to be. Muslims are allowed to pray, non-Muslims are allowed to visit, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
However, the vast land gains made by Israel in 1967 galvanized, I'm going to say extremists, because they're religious extremists, yes, but they're not technically the most religious people in Israel. Like, there's people who are much more extremist in their practice of religion who are less nationalistic than these people.
That's kind of
sense.
Like what – that's why I think fundamentalists make sense. It's the same with the evangelicals in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. And so The huge land gains made by Israel in 67 galvanized these religious fundamentalists, or these right-wing fundamentalists, because Israel had reclaimed much of ancient Judea and Samaria. Many figures in Messianic Judaism, which had adopted a somewhat pragmatic stance over the temple since the founding of Israel, believed that this was a message from the big guy himself. That's right, God. Israel, they thought, would take control of all the territory controlled by the former Jewish kingdom, and the third temple would be rebuilt upon the Temple Mount. Unfortunately, there's something on the Temple Mount already, and that's Al-Aqsa Mosque, Dome of the Rock, etc. However, things didn't exactly go to maybe how they thought they were going to go. Eventually, Sinai was given back to Egypt. The Camp David Accords really disillusioned a lot of these guys. It's like Israel made all these gains, and they were like, yes, things are coming true, things are coming true. And then, like, politics kind of got in the way, and things were maybe not coming so true anymore. I want to note that the first guy that I could find that tried to destroy Al-Aqsa Mosque in the modern era was not a Jew, but an Australian born-again Christian sometime in the late 1960s tried to set fire to it.
So they could build the temple.
So they could build the temple. Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
However, starting in the 60s, a group of radicals, there was many groups of radicals, but a particular group of radicals called the Jewish Underground, which is not a very creative name. No. Yeah. Started coming up with all these, and a lot of these guys were also, they followed this guy named Rabbi Kook.
I know. It's not a great name.
Yeah. They came up with this plan to crash a plane filled with explosives into the Dome of the Rock. They're like, okay, well, maybe that won't work. But we're going to do a combined assault of silenced Uzis, gas, and explosives stolen from army bases, and we're going to blow up the Dome of the Rock, Al-Aqsa Mosque, that way so we can build the temple.
You're telling me this is Kook's plan?
This was actually, Kook refused to bless this plan, which is the reason that it didn't go out. And I'll get to that a little bit later, but these guys were actually too extreme for a lot of people. They were like, because their whole plan was that this would blow up, if once they did this, this would put Israel into a regional war that Israel would no doubt win. And so that would actually finally reclaim all the territory that I had just given back from, you know, the ancient Jewish kingdom and, like, finally put a stop to all the enemies of Israel, Egypt. Well, I mean, I don't know, because I don't know what would happen if someone blew up the Dome of the Rock. Like, I think that probably even, you know, traitor countries like Egypt would have to be like, fuck, we got to do something about this. There would be it would be an unprecedented event, essentially. So a lot of these guys get arrested because, first of all, they maimed and killed a lot of Palestinian civilians, and they were finally arrested by the Israeli police while setting explosives on five buses full of Arab civilians who were supposed to be going to work. A lot of these guys go to prison. However, public pressure and a lenient judiciary let many of them out within a decade or sometimes much less, oftentimes to a lot of fanfare and reintegration into what was becoming the political mainstream. So these guys started out pretty far outside the political mainstream.
Get absorbed in.
But, yes, Israeli political culture has moved more towards their position
sort
and they're sort of meeting in the middle.
Throughout this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1980, Israel passes a law saying that Jerusalem was not only complete and united, which is clearly a contested claim, but also the real capital of Israel. This is what prompts the UN to pass a resolution being like, no, that law is null and void, but Israel doesn't care. And so when people say the occupation of Jerusalem is illegal, that's what they're referring to, right? They're saying that it is illegal under international law. East Jerusalem is occupied territory, which, again, I don't really understand how you can just be like, oh, it's just occupied territory.
Oh, we're just occupying this territory.
It's like, well, get them out. I don't understand.
Yeah, one would think that. But, I mean, the Israelis are like, as much as they might sort of hem and haw at this stuff, like Jerusalem, I don't think that's really that negotiable for them. Like, they're keeping that motherfucker. And that's, I think this UN resolution is a real part of the rhetoric, or it's behind a lot of the rhetoric you hear from Israeli politicians talk about the sovereignty of Israel.
Right?
Like, this is obviously, like, the most, like, if you were just, like, playing the world on God mode, you'd be like, well, maybe Jerusalem should be like a UN administered city or something like that. Like
it should UNESCO.
Like a UNESCO.
Or A mall.
Or it should become a mall. Yeah, I think that's a good – there's probably a ton of malls in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
But it's – this is like the sovereignty thing, especially around Jerusalem. A lot of that comes from this UN stuff.
Yeah. So since, you know, over the past three decades, as we all know, Israel has continued to enforce greater control over the entire complex, restricting Palestinian access, allowing a bunch of right-wing extremists to enter.
Yeah, in fact, the Second Intifada was set off by Ariel Sharon visiting the Temple Mount, which was hugely popular with the Israeli population, but obviously was not received well by Muslims because they took this, or by Palestinians and Muslims in general, because they took this to mean, and I kind of understandably, that this could be a, this is like a basically a provocation and like that Israel might maintain or might take full sovereignty of Al-Aqsa.
Yeah. In 2014, Israel closed down access to Al-Aqsa for the first time since 67, and then proceeded to, later in that year, use a bunch of tear gas, stun grenades on Palestinians who were inside the mosque.
Yeah, yeah. They demolished a Palestinian neighborhood that near the Western Wall. You know, they have these huge Israel Day celebrations, like literally right outside Al-Aqsa near the Western Wall.
Yeah.
Like they essentially, like they use this area right outside as like a way to provoke Muslims praying inside the mosque.
Yeah.
You know, they have all these security procedures. Like in 2017, they added metal detectors, which led, I believe there was like a strike of Palestinians after that. There was riots. There were some people got killed. And then in 2021, under the very briefly reigning government of Naftali Bennett, it was revealed that some Jews had actually been praying at the Temple Mount for years after a member of Bennett's own party was filmed praying here. Now, Bennett, if you remember, was sort of like the liberal alternative to Netanyahu. People were like, well, he's not that good, but he's better than Netanyahu. And so, like, he's sort of like the centrist, less extreme right-wing version of Netanyahu. Israeli politics being what they are, he's still a fucking lunatic.
Right.
You know, this is a member of his party that's praying there. So this was a huge change from the status quo. And Bennett appeared to confirm that when he said that, quote, freedom of worship must be allowed. But under immense public and probably political pressure from certain quarters, he backed down a day later and was like, the status quo isn't changed.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, through all of this, it's like the only word I can think of is provocative. They keep trying to like push and push and push up until the like points at which, you know, they'll get a reaction kind of shift. They're trying to shift that point.
Yeah, and so, I mean, what they do is, you know, what the guy from the MK from Bennett's party did, and what these sort of extremist fundamentalists do is that they go there with police protection, and they have police stand between them and oftentimes representatives from the people from the Jordanian organization that controls the grounds. And the Jews pray, and they deny that they are, and they say that they don't go there to pray, but they very obviously pray, and they are protected by Israeli police escorts. So recent polls, in fact, kind of for a while, but there are just are more recent polls now, have shown majority support for Jewish prayer at the Temple Mount. A 2022 survey by the Israel Democracy Institute showed 50% of Jewish Israelis polled said Jews should be able to pray not because of religious desire, and this is important necessarily, but because it is proof of Israel's sovereignty over the Temple Mount. So this isn't an actual religious compulsion they have that people should be allowed to pray there. This is not something that they like feel very religiously strongly about. This is a nationalist view of prayer at the Temple Mount.
But that nationalism is tied up in.
Of course, yeah. Of course. But like that, it is a primacy over that. 25% responded because it is a religious commandment. So you see that sovereignty becomes actually like the overriding factor over anything there. So in recent years, the more feverish right-wing zealots in Israel have pushed up requirements to let Muslims pray in peace, because that's what they're supposed to be able to do there too. Obviously, that does not happen, but that is ostensibly, technically supposed to be part of the status quo. That is completely out the window for, let's say, some sectors in Israeli society. So Itamar Ben-Gvir.
Our favorite.
You know him, you love him, and he is in the Israeli fucking government. A minister stormed the Temple Mount with 1,000 settlers and armed police. And he was talking about, of course, classic Israeli sovereignty over Al-Aqsa and the Temple Mount. And he just gets in there with a bunch of people, I think it's a couple years ago, start praying and just like have these police protecting him. And this is all kind of building up. Like this is, the status quo has been changing fairly steadily.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, I think this is, like we mentioned before, one of the big reasons that the Hamas named their operation Al-Aqsa Flood is because the status quo has changed so dramatically in the past several years. But there are people who want to change the status quo even more than these religious settlers who are just breaking in and fucking things up. There's a really excellent, very long document from 2013 called Dangerous Liaison by the group Ir Amin that lays a lot of this stuff out. This group has put out a ton of stuff on the temple movement. It is, you know, really detailed sort of dossiers on these different groups. But the one that we're most concerned with today, because it has to do with those red heifers we were talking about earlier.
The cows
we were talking about earlier. If they want to, I'm just going to do this once. If they want a white cow in Israel, I'd be happy to supply my wife.
That's terrible.
I know.
And you're not married.
I'm not married, but it's just something I feel like I had to say. God did that. One of the main groups pushing for this stuff is the Temple Institute.
These guys are fucking crazy.
They're freaks. Their website is incredible.
Yeah. And by that, I mean it's not great.
It's not great. And actually, we looked at their plans for a rebuilt third temple last night.
Yes, and they're very bad.
They're horrible.
They're really bad.
They have like 3D renderings, artwork, like not artwork. What do you call it when an architect makes blueprints?
Yeah.
They have blueprints, 3D renderings. And I got to tell you, it looks like it looks like a 3-star Saudi hotel.
It's really not cute.
So tacky.
It's really bad.
I could not.
I don't expect much, I will say, but I did expect a little bit more.
If I'm saying third temple,
I feel like
you,
it's going to have gray floors.
If I'm the Messiah and I see this is, I see this is the temple they're building,
floors.
I'm like, I don't know if I'm coming back for this one.
Maybe farmhouse kitchen.
A fourth temple, perhaps, because I don't know if I'm really rocking with this. So
you
they were
a modern temple. It's so weird.
It is weird. Well, there are, I mean, churches, temples, there's modern
Yeah,
ones.
Those suck.
They do look horrible.
They're
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, yeah. God only lives in old stuff.
Yeah.
So this group was started in 1984 by Rabbi Yisrael Ariel, who was one of the paratroopers who occupied the Temple Mount in 1967. His experience standing on the Temple Mount and chilling there, looking at the Dome of the Rock, was like, led him to believe like, fuck, dude, we gotta build the third temple. So the Temple Institute describes itself as an educational group that conducts tours of the Temple Mount and receives money from the Israeli government.
Mm.
You could also get out of military service by volunteering there. It's like one
I mean,
of those,
yeah, it's just like very well supported.
It's
by
very
the Israel-
well supported,
it is,
yeah.
This is not, it's a fringe group in the sense of their crazy beliefs. But it is much like fringe groups in America has like deep pockets and connections with the state.
I mean, that's the thing is so there were groups that wanted to build the third temple prior to the foundation of Israel that lived there.
Mm-hmm.
So like in the 1920s, there was a group called the Strong Men, which
that's
is
a better name.
Young Chomsky's heavily nodding his head there. But they wanted to
more
like
more so than like, with anything what we said in the podcast.
They literally wanted to like build the kingdom of Israel again. Like they were anti-democratic. Mm. They were like it was like a religious thing fully.
Get the Sinai.
It's a little more complicated with the modern groups because these guys just frankly aren't as religious as like a lot of religious Jews are. Like they are, but like again, I should stress like a lot of this stuff is really about sovereignty and nationalism.
Well, they're
as
religious,
well.
But maybe they're not conservative in the way that you're thinking. Like when you think of like Orthodox Jews, they're not.
Yeah, they don't have
ultra Orthodox. I mean,
I'm sure there are ultra Orthodox ones, but a lot of these guys, like the Hilltop Youth, for example, like the like most sort of notorious like teen settler freaks, mm-hmm. like they're like on drugs and like have like not really that religious, but it's like they're like. sort of like a lumpen fascist element.
Yeah.
That like, and these guys are, you know, the Temple Institute is not the lumpen fascist element, but I think it's like, it's, they're more serious about their religion, but it's more, it's not as like, I don't know, it's just a little different.
Yeah. I think it mirror, it's not too dissimilar from some of the ways in which like the less like practicing kids of a lot of these like fundamentalist Christian groups operate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, you know, then obviously then like U.S. nationalism is like very different, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so like, you know, a big part of like what Temple Institute does is like they like recreate old religious vessels, and they have like, you know, a museum where they have they display like the garb of the priests that are supposed to, like the special priests that are supposed to sacrifice the animals and stuff like that. They actually do animal sacrifices. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah, they do animal sacrifices. I mean, is it so much better to get killed like that or get your, you know, cow punched or whatever? I don't know. Heifer punched. But they're not like the ultra orthodox guys that maybe some people are thinking of. You know, they began they're definitely more modern. They began on the right wing margins, but they and connected groups have slowly become more mainstream. Members of the Knesset have increasingly grown close to them, have been endorsed by them. They've been like lauded in the Knesset. The chief Ashkenazi rabbi of Jerusalem, David Lau, once endorsed them, although it seems like I looked at more of his recent statements. I don't know if he's walked it back, but I think he got a little freaked because he's like, oh, these guys are serious. One of the guys who planned to blow up the Dome of the Rock, you know, those guys I was talking about who were, you know, so obsessed with Israel's taking the Sinai that they decided to blow up the Dome of the Rock. A guy named Yehuda Etzion, who changed his last name to Etzion in the 1960s as an homage to an early illegal Israeli settlement. You know, he got imprisoned for his terrorist activities. And once he got out of prison, he realized that his former approach had been too violent, that he had been too avant-garde, and that he is now something like a temple reformer. As
a reformist.
Yes.
Interesting.
And so that is now like the main tact of these guys, is they're explicitly laying out that we actually need to lay the groundwork in public opinion and public acceptance of the building of the third temple, which
they kind of are.
And the thing is, too, they are kind of slick about it, too, because in all of, like, the depictions of the third temple, there's no, like, Allah's, there's no Dome of the Rock. There's no Muslim shrines there. We just got the third temple. And so the implication, the very obvious, overt implication,
is that we're
going to destroy that.
Yeah.
To put up
our condo.
Yeah, to put up
a condo temple.
It's a very nice real estate property, and you haven't even looked at it yet before you make your judgment, but I guess that's how you people are, Christians. So, you know, like I said, as part of this sort of easing the public into it, there have been these ritual practice sacrifices of lambs for Passover. Every year, like, someone tries to go up to the Temple Mount with a lamb and, like, do it. Mm-hmm. And they do get stopped by police because I think the cops are like, we can't have, like, Israeli police are pretty conciliatory to the temple movement people. But, like, I think that is, like, they just have to work doubles for the next week. And so they probably don't want to do that. You know, they're slowly easing this into public consciousness is actually working to an extent. You know, a member of Benny Gantz's more, quote, liberal party said in the Knesset, it is important to extract it from the purview of religious lunatics. And he's talking about the Temple Mount. We must explain to broad sections of the public that without this place, our national freedom is not complete. So you see, again, this issue of sovereignty.
Right.
Like, he's talking about like this is nothing to do with like the religious lunatics who believe in this stuff. Like, we need to take over this and build the third temple because it's our right to do it because we control this territory.
Why don't they want the Sinai back?
What's in the Sinai?
But isn't that like, doesn't that hold a lot of religious significance for?
Yeah.
Look at me.
I mean, but they're like, I mean, I don't know. I guess they just don't really want it back that bad. I mean, we'll take it eventually.
Because, I mean, I think they want to build the temple.
They're kind of more focused on the temple now. So there are dozens of temple organizations in Israel, with the Temple Institute being the largest, most mainstream. The guy I was talking about before, the terrorist, Yehuda Etzion, he has his own little temple group. In 2022, temple movement groups tore down signage forbidding religious Jews from entrance to the Temple Mount and put up signage under the aegis of Israeli police. So, like, in official places, encouraging Jewish prayer on the Mount. And now they've got their red heifer.
The cow. So Jewish tradition says that there have been 9 red cows. I just don't like saying heifer. Is that weird?
It does sound like a slur for cows. You know what I mean?
It does, yeah.
it's like you're being insulting to them.
I know. So there have been 9 red cows sacrificed to date. And the last one was around 1516 AD. So it's been a very long time.
That was like right after Jesus. We had to get one in.
The 10th red cow shall be the last. That's the idea. This is the one that gets made into ash by the Messiah when the third temple is built.
Mm-hmm.
For Jews. But for Christians, that's a fake Messiah. The Antichrist.
Yeah. But it's this—
To
reiterate, the Jews believe that our actual real from God Messiah will come.
Yes.
And be like, I'm the Messiah and enter us in the Messianic age.
Sure.
But the Christians think that same guy will appear, but he's actually the Antichrist.
Right. And then they're going to battle it out with the real Christ in Armageddon.
And I don't want to miss a thing.
Ooh, dude.
Okay. So this, but back to the cows. So the purification ceremony happens, and that's, because God is only approachable in pure state.
Mm-hmm.
Since the last red cow's ashes were supposedly lost with the destruction of the Second Temple, like you mentioned at the top of the episode, every Jew from that time on is seen as impure.
I can't argue with that.
Only a spiritually pure rabbi can burn the red cow. Otherwise, you have the impure making the pure cow impure. You know what I mean?
And yeah, you can't do that.
But this is like what I don't understand, because then to become impure, you need the ashes of the red cow, but you can't make ashes of the red cow if you're impure. It feels like a bit of a
catch. It's complicated. If you look at numbers, it talks about purity around corpse
numbers
stuff.
Numbers in the Old Testament.
Yes, numbers is in the Old Testament. If you look at that, it talks about corpse purity rituals. You can catch being impure crazy easy from people.
Mm.
And so being impure is it's definitely a cootie
COVID
style
situation.
Thing. No, way worse than COVID. Because COVID is not real, but God is.
I did want to clarify that, because numbers definitely sounds like a guy in your life
numbers,
that you know.
Yeah, my numbers guy.
I called my
friend numbers. Yeah, fair enough.
It does
yeah.
really sound like a brace guy.
Well, it's the
Deuteronomy as well. No offense.
Yeah, Deuteronomy. Yeah, I do know Deuteronomy.
That's actually a really good
Deuteronomy
rapper name for you.
It would be good. Yeah, Leviticus too.
No, that one's maybe a little too on the nose.
What about? I feel like my sex name would be Revelations.
That's terrible.
You know?
That's terrible.
That, like my fuck
What's
name
a sex
is that
name?
That's like my fuck name.
What is that?
Well, you don't know, but when you're a pro, when you're good at or whatever, you kind of get a nickname.
You're
they give,
good
like,
at whatever.
Dale Earnhardt and stuff that those guys get. And
what's his nickname?
Speedy. But he had one, I'm sure. You get a nickname if you're really good. So in the fuck community, they call me
Deuteronomy.
Revelations. They call me Revelations.
Okay, so back to the cows. A qualified red cow has not been found in Israel in almost 2,000 years.
Fair enough.
Weirdly, though, red cattle are not unusual in the United States, which, by the way, cue weird evangelical stuff about destiny here and the role of the United States in helping Israel, right, for these weird cow people. There's a breed, an American breed of cow called Red Angus.
Red Angus.
That looks... like how it sounds. And also, that also sounds like a brace friend.
I know. Listen, I know a lot. I've met a lot of people in my life, all right? I've never met a red Angus.
Do you know an Angus?
I don't know any. No, I don't know.
I feel like
the only Angus I can think of is a guitar player from the two brothers from AC/DC.
What's the only character?
Well, I guess
Angus.
Only one is named Angus.
Yeah, what's the character Angus from that movie?
Yeah.
Oh, the movie's Angus.
Which great Weezer B-side on that soundtrack.
Okay. In 1996, a red calf was born in Israel on a farm. There was a rabbi there that pronounced it as a qualified red heifer cow, even though it had stray white hairs and the red ones were starting to turn black. I think this one rabbi was very excited.
Yes, and so here's the thing, too. This cow has to be totally red. Like, one of the things that I think it has to be between, like, 2 and 5 years old. It has to have no more than 2 non-red hairs on
it.
And it can never have been yoked, meaning, like, it can never have been used for work. And it can't have any deformities, meaning also it cannot have been chipped ever.
Yes, a totally pure red cow.
So no COVID vaccine.
I think it's basically at 2 years old, you start to determine whether this could be the pure red cow. And then once you decide, you have to wait until it reaches 5 years, at which point it's ready for
the next circumcision.
Regardless, with this cow, the one from the 90s, even though it didn't seem to be the right cow, the rabbis got very excited and they took all the news to Jerusalem and everyone freaked out. There was a Haaretz columnist at the time that called for the cow to be shot because they said it was more dangerous than like any Arab terrorist to like the future of Israel.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a really, really big thing. So it took a couple years, but everyone was like, look, this cow is 1, turning black, 2, where it's not turning black, it's got white hairs. This is not the red cow.
Yeah.
So it was not. They took back their claims that this would be the one.
And then, from a September 20th, 2022 article in the Jerusalem Post, Liz, if you would read this.
5 perfectly red heifers required for the ritual purification of those who have touched a dead body. It's a weird way to say that. Arrived in Israel from a ranch in Texas on Thursday as the Temple Institute continues preparations to lay the ground for the construction of the 3rd temple in Jerusalem.
A Texas cattleman named Byron Stinson found these fucking cows.
A Christian Zionist.
A Christian Zionist. Yeah, Byron Stinson. No, he's a Jew. Byron Stinson found these fucking cows, these 5 perfectly red heifers, and sent them along to Israel. So this was a joint mission between Christian and Israeli Zionist organizations, many of them being tax-exempt U.S., quote, charities.
You gotta love it.
So again, these people both believe that this will bring about the Messiah. However, the Christians, in a kind of an apocalyptic millenarian thing, however, the Christians think that he's going to be the Antichrist, and these Jewish guys are like, no, he's the real deal. Trust me, he told me.
Classic double story.
Classic double story.
Yeah.
This was laid out by Third Temple activist Zaki Mamo. I don't actually know how to pronounce it, but T-Z-A-C-H-I. Zaki Mamo, who laid out these plans explicitly at the National Gathering for Prayer and Repentance at the Bible Museum in D.C., which was convened by Mike Johnson, the current Speaker of the House.
That's crazy.
Yes. So he's like giving a speech about this stuff, specifically about the red heifers and the Third Temple, to a huge group of evangelical leaders. I mean, it's like everybody, Family Research Council, moral majority, all those kind of people. A lot of politicians are there from the Republican Party. And he's like, we're going to do this. The Antichrist is coming or whatever.
Like,
our
yay!
Messiah, but your Antichrist is coming.
Yay!
You know, it should be noted that Israel has pretty strict requirements for the import of livestock to begin with. They have to be chipped.
That's like every country.
Because they get sick. You know, you don't want like fucking, you don't want like shit cattle in your rocking cattle.
Well, yeah, but also, you want to track where these things are coming from and if they're bringing anything into the country.
Also diseases.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. This was not done with the red heifers. They are unchipped because that is the equivalent of a yoke and a deformity.
An exception was made for these cows.
Yes, exception was made for these five red cows. According to Ir Amin, I believe, joint Israeli-Palestinian, maybe just Israeli NGO that I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. The importation of the heifers was explicitly assisted by the Ministry of Agriculture.
So the government made an exception for these cows, yes, because they could be the ones sacrificed to bring about the building of the Third Temple.
So the red heifers were met at the airport by Zahi Mamo, who, by the way, it should be mentioned, is not only like a Third Temple guy, but he's a prominent East Jerusalem settler activist.
You don't say.
Who's personally involved in evictions in Sheikh Jarrah.
Yeah,
so like he is like a guy who is he's a nasty fucking piece of work.
Yeah.
And a government official who is the Director General of the Ministry of Cultural Affairs in Jerusalem from, I believe, Ben-Gavir's party. I might be wrong about that. But, like, they're met by, you know, prominent settler activists and Israeli far-right politicians who are far-right but still within the Israeli political mainstream. The cows have been transferred to Shiloh, where they've been visited by a ton of Christians and psycho-Jews. You can look up, if you're driving right now, close your eyes, first of all, and then do Siri and be like, Siri, YouTube. Siri, YouTube. I don't know if that works on other people's phones.
Well, yeah, just take your foot off of the pedal because you're in your Cybertruck and it'll just keep driving and Siri will take over.
You know what a good prank to play is? Mm. Check this out. Alexa, call, do not answer.
I get it.
You know, I have
do you have that in your phone?
All my old heroin dealers I put in my phone is do not answer and they're still in my phone.
That's cute.
10 years later.
Yeah.
Or there's something that are like, do not call, do not answer under any circumstances. I still called them.
That's what happens in three-body problems.
They do not call?
Yeah.
I try to give people, I'm trying to spice up people's life a little bit. Mm. So if you look at YouTube and like search just Red Heifers Visit, because there's a lot of just like videos like the Red Heifers, like from like Christian Ministries,
sure,
YouTube.
There's like charismatics.org.
Yeah. But you can find like a ton of like sort of soy-faced people being like, the Red Heifer, like who are in Shiloh, like visiting them at the Temple Institute.
I mean, speaking of psychos that have been there, like Benjamin Netanyahu planted an olive tree at Shiloh in 2019, which was a fucking controversial move and was a clear nod to the temple activists.
Well, in 2011, Zaki Mamo, purchased a plot of land on the Mount of Olives overlooking the temple. And apparently, the government has been funding what is going to be a sacrificial spot for the cows there. So the place that they're going to sacrifice the cows is not actually on the Temple Mount, but it has to be looking into the Temple Mount, like where it's at. And so that is where they're planning on doing it.
Now, according to a Facebook post from 3 weeks ago from the Temple Institute, they may have a priest ready. Now, do you want to read this post? I don't know if you looked at the photo yet, but.
Oh, I've seen the kid. He's like a young guy, right?
Hold on, but read the post.
Oh, yeah,
and we can
okay,
look at
I have seen this before. He came into the world via home birth, has never set foot in a hospital or cemetery, and therefore considered by halacha, Jewish law, to be of the highest level of Torah purity, having never contracted tumat met, impurity imparted by contact with a corpse. Should he opt to participate in Temple Institute's ongoing preparations in anticipation of the renewal of the ashes of the red heifer, he will undergo intense instruction and training. So, yeah, that's the whole thing. So check this out.
Yeah, and then there's the kid.
If you're inside a building where someone dies, or I believe even where someone just has died, I think, but like in a place where there's dead bodies, which would be a cemetery, I think it is maybe someone currently dead. A cemetery or a hospital, like you are impure. And the red heifer ceremony, like that's, so I guess that's kind of how they got around him being.
It all feels
red
very
heifer impure.
Literal in a way
that is welcome to Judaism. That is exactly, we have a string around Manhattan.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And so I'm telling you, it's how it is. But he chose us for a reason, and that's our ingenuity.
I just think it's like kind of, missing the point.
Of what?
I don't know. It's too
what should we? What do the other ones do? Have like a brazier with incense in it? You know, it's like, come on.
I think it's cute.
Plus, the kid is fucking hot.
He looks like a basketball blogger.
He really does. He kind of looks like Nate Silver. So, cut to October 7th, 2023. Al-Aqsa flood. In the first part of Hamas's 16-page document on why they did October 7th, they state, the Israeli Judaization plans to the Blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque, its temporal and spatial division attempts, as well as the intensification of the Israeli settlers' incursions into the Holy Mosque, and then in another bullet point, the practices of the extremist and right-wing Israeli government, which is practically taking steps towards annexing the entire West Bank and Jerusalem into the so-called, quote, Israel's sovereignty, amid plans on the Israeli official table to expel Palestinians from their homes and areas. So this is, again, the Hamas document explaining their reasonings for why they attacked Israel on October 7th. And the very first bullet point has to do with Al-Aqsa Mosque. It is... Not an exaggeration to say that this is is a real fear among a lot of Palestinians and I think Muslims in general. But Al-Aqsa is also, functioned as a sort of political flashpoint between Israel and the Palestinians to begin with. Because, as anybody who has a cursory knowledge of Israel can say, like, a lot of what they've done is these ramping up of security measures and this encroachment more and more and more and more onto the way that the Palestinians, the security measures they take, including the walls, the cameras, all this kind of stuff. They function at two levels. They function as a way to, actually have, quote, security measures, but they also function as a visible means of control and dispossession to the people who live under them. And the measures taken around Al-Aqsa Mosque are very, very much like politically fraught and understood by both parties, by the Palestinian Muslims and by the Israeli security forces, that there is a political import and reasoning behind them. And that has to do with Israel's so-called sovereignty.
Now, for where we're at right now, we should say, Avni Jerusalem, a Third Temple group, recently told the Christian Broadcasting Network, which apparently is a thing, that the ceremony was planned for Passover 2024. Which is right now.
Right now.
That's right now. And I think they said up until around mid-May. And that's assuming that these red cows don't develop any blemishes. But I really don't think it's going to happen. Do you?
I really don't. I mean, it should be noted that Hamas, on the 100th day of Israel's genocidal rampage through Gaza, their spokesman, Abu Abeda, made a statement actually referencing these red heifers. Mm. Now, I got to tell you, I think the Israeli government, I got a lot of thoughts about the Israeli government. Most of you can probably assume what they are. I don't know if they're stupid enough to do this, but they might be. My feeling is that this will just continue. It's a millenarian, right? Mm-hmm. And if you are somebody who is a practitioner of a millenarian religion, your number one thing that you got to get really good at is coming up with excuses as to why things didn't happen. And so I bet what they're going to do is like, oh, actually, we're going to wait another year because of such and such reason. Like the Cohen isn't, the priest isn't like pure enough, or like we have to find something else, or like there won't be something in line. Maybe there will, maybe they might do it, but I have a feeling they'll just keep putting it off and then eventually these cows will grow too old. What I don't understand is why would we as Jews sacrifice an animal for God? Why would God even need that? Because he actually sacrificed his only son for us.
Mm.
And so we actually don't need to do animal sacrifices because the greatest sacrifice, the most dangerous sacrifice of all.
The most dangerous sacrifice of all. I just think it's fucking crazy when you start to realize that all the people in charge believe this insane fucking shit.
I gotta tell you.
It's like worse than Dr. Strangelove. It's Dr. Strangelove Bible Thumper.
I just am like, I watch so many videos of like Stinson talking and a lot of these guys talking. I'm just like, what? Like, dude, are you for real? Like, you believe this? But a lot of people, I mean, that's the thing is a lot of people, listen, I think it's been, atheism has become very unfashionable in recent years. I think because atheists crossed the annoying quotient. Yeah, like they got too annoying and made God real.
Well, they also, Talk about, like, literalists.
Yes. Yeah. And I think also, like, the Christian right has, like, it's lost cultural ground to, like, liberals or whatever. Mm. But then sometimes when you read this stuff, you're like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, they shouldn't be having these prayer things with these guys. Like, I think it's like, if you think the Antichrist is going to come and do an apocalypse, I'm like, I feel like you shouldn't be in the government. But
so many of them are.
Because I've always understood that actually the real apocalyptic event will happen when the armies of Christendom fight against the Islamic State in Dabiq. And so that's kind of what I've been like waiting on. Because my whole thing is with any of this is I am waiting until all cards are on the table before making my bet. Right? I am a blank slate. I will go to whatever heaven is real, which is the most Jewish thing of all to do. But I'm just like anybody, whoever's apocalypse is coming true, I will join them because it seems like they were probably.
Wait, but how are you going to know which is true?
I'll know if the Antichrist comes, dude.
Do you think that you would be able to tell that Antichrist is the Antichrist?
Fuck yeah, dude. I'd be like, that guy's the Antichrist.
But that's then what if he's not?
Then he would prove me wrong by doing a cool miracle.
But like what if he's like, I don't care because I don't care about you?
That would really hurt my feelings. But Christ would never say something like that, right?
I think.
Was Christ nice? Was he chill?
Famously very nice.
But didn't he like...
He treated others as he wanted himself to be treated.
Well, that didn't work, did it? I mean, it's...
It did, though, because he was...
He goes to heaven, yeah.
He was resurrected.
I don't understand. I mean,
then he comes down and then he kills, like, everyone dies. So.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, so he's just delayed because I'm like, I get it if he came down like 10 years after he got smoked and was like, time to die.
It's like, but also, like, would be funny, like, that's like such a like short period of time.
I know,
it would
have
been
like,
very funny.
Well, we didn't do it. You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, what? Why now? Like, you come back now?
I don't know. They've got the cows.
Why don't you come back and get the guys that did this to you?
Maybe they should do the cows, then it doesn't happen, and then we can all move on.
We're not going to move on, because here's the thing. If they do the cows and it doesn't happen, the other thing is the temple activists say that, like, well, maybe we'll do the cow, and also, like, even the Christian evangelicals who are involved in this will say, like, we might do the cows now, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we're building a temple tomorrow. And so that's another way to put off the millenarian shit, like, even further.
I think... It's like, we need to build, okay, you know what you always do with these people? You go Looney Tunes on them. And so we build a dummy entrance where we say, okay, this is where, oh, now is the time. Do the cows, build the temple, and we get them to do it, and we let them have their little fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happens, and then everyone can go home and make fun of them.
Well, what I don't understand is that why these guys—
Or just leave them there. You know, like paint we're in Looney Tunes mode, so then we paint after we've painted the tunnel for them to go through,
yeah,
we repaint it so they can't get out, and then we
don't
have to deal with them again.
That's a really good idea, but I don't like the feelings of Jews being trapped like that. My question is this, why is everybody out there searching for a Messiah? When's he going to come? When's he going to come? He has already come. He has already come. And his name was Menachem Mendel Schneerson.
I thought you were going to say, why is everyone always saying, when is he going to come, when you should be saying?
When is she going to come? That is something that Revelations would say. That Revelations would say that. When is she gonna experience pleasure?
You should be asking.
When is she gonna experience pleasure? Because that's what a lot of guys don't understand. Is she needs to experience a modicum of pleasure as well.
Modicum.
A modicum of pleasure as well. A measure of pleasure.
Modicum also sounds like maybe.
Modicum. Well, that's what I used to be called in the sexual community, and then they've raised me up to
like
Revelation.
The sexual community.
You don't like the
so
sexual
disgusting.
Community. You sound like Jerry Falwell. Well, but unlike a lot of his friends. Yes, the sexual community, Liz.
I do like. It does feel very Spike TV era fedora atheist.
It does,
like man
yeah.
show period that we're kind of reliving in again.
Yeah,
the sexual community. Like it does feel sort of like it's like the woke. pickup artist.
Well, I don't get about people who's like, they're like, I live a sex-based lifestyle.
No one says that.
People do say that. Well,
who
they
says
live that?
That?
I don't know if they say that, but they live that. But people who are like, you know, like a
sex. So they don't say that.
Like, I don't know if they say that. I don't know them. But people who are in the sex community.
No, that's not a
that
community.
Aren't me. I don't speak
that's
when I'm
That's not a community.
I just fuck. I don't speak. I just make love. I speak with this. I speak with this.
Oh, but also, you're also a guy that has the split tongue.
Oh, yeah. I am.
Revelations. That's a fucking split tongue.
The lizard
tongue.
Man. Yeah, they call me the lizard man of Brooklyn.
And pierced. It's pierced.
Everything is pierced, hunty. Everything
don't
is
ever
pierced.
Ever fucking say that again.
I pierced the house down. No. Sorry, I'm trying to be more accommodating to those people.
I do feel like Revelations is extremely straight, though.
He is. But also, straight sex is crazy gay if you get into the nuts and bolts of it. But my thing is with Revelations, my thing is with sex people in general, is like, once you have sex, like, say you're someone who lives a sexual lifestyle. Once you have sex, like, it's like midday and you've had your first frolic of the noon, aren't you kind of like, I'm done, yeah. You know? Aren't you like,
hopefully.
Yeah, like, aren't you like, this is what I never understand. Like, if you're in an orgy style.
I do feel like if we're talking about the kind of like, the sex community type, they're not doing this in the early day. This is a strictly nighttime, this is nighttime nightclub activity.
Yeah, okay. But like Lothario used to eat 40 oysters off a woman's
breast. I know, but that's gourmand coded. This is the sex community. Revelations is like fedora, pinstripe. He's got, look, you can't be it during the day because you've got the red, you've got red drapes everywhere.
So
the velvet
I'm like
drapes
preparing.
Are. Yeah, we've got dripping candles.
Yeah.
But
I'm,
also
okay.
Like trip hop.
They live like vampires from Blade. Kind
yeah.
Of.
But
yeah.
Also, like industrial music and maybe some
that's
like
Blade.
Kind of like R&B.
That's also
mixed in.
Blade. So they're just the vampires from Blade? Revelations
but atheism.
The only god I worship is pleasure. The god who's
little,
the goddess of pleasure?
Dionysian.
Eros.
I don't think it's like Dionysian.
I sacrifice my sputum at the altar of Eros.
I think we gotta workshop this one a little bit.
Well, yeah, Revelations has to be a little smoother. I sacrifice my sputum at the altar. Yeah.
I don't know if sputum
it doesn't
works.
Work. Yeah.
What would you know about the sex community? What would you guys know about the fuck?
I can't speak on sputum.
You can't speak on sputum. That's true. I can't. I live sputum.
Okay,
I die sputum.
Let's stop before you.
Sputum.
I'm Liz.
I hardly know him. My name is Revelations, a he of the forked tongue, the cloven hoof, better to massage your back with. He,
do you, you never watched SVU, right?
The Law and Order?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen it, yeah.
There's like so to our SVU heads out there, like there's some very canonical episodes from the early SVU era, which was like late 90s, where they do a lot of like investigation into like weird vampire sex parties.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that plus like Taxi Cab Confessions HBO era, real sex, like real sex HBO feels
yeah.
Very Revelations coded.
Very much
not
so.
Bible, but character.
I remember when I was a kid, I read, my stepmom had a book, like a kind of like airport book that she had bought about like people who thought they were real vampires. And like there was like some of like the satanic like murder stuff or whatever, but then sure. There was like some people who thought this like D&D style game was real, which was also, I think people killed each other because of that. They did. But there was sex vampires they talked about in that
right.
Too, like people who did like sexual vampire
sure.
Stuff. I remember
I feel like
that,
vampires are very sex community.
Oh,
first
they're the most sexual of the beasts.
Yeah,
except of course, dogs. But the let's just call them as I see them. But the vampires are too sexy for me. How come there's never like a sexy Frankenstein? He already makes the noise.
Because he's not real. Like, he's not fully human.
He's not, yeah,
I think they're making
right.
A sexy Frankenstein.
They
wasn't
are
that
making a
kind
sexy
of
Frankenstein.
The movie with Emma Stone? I didn't see it.
I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah. No, she did sexy Frankenstein in
but
that.
But isn't it kind of like
sexy baby Frankenstein?
She's like a baby brained. Yeah.
But that doesn't seem very interesting, I gotta say.
It was all right. I saw it.
I didn't see it.
Don't, you're just saying that because you know I saw it and you didn't, so you can be like, you're a movie head. And I saw it the same way I watch every single fucking movie I watch.
with Sarah.
Sarah texted me at 9 o'clock at night and said, do you want to go see a movie?
And I'm not saying that. I just think it doesn't sound great.
It was fine. I don't know. It wasn't for me, but I was better than I thought it would be. And speaking of better than I thought it would be, thank you for enjoying this episode.
We'll see you next.
Wait, we didn't say
we did.
Producer Young Chomsky?
Thank you.
Scoring points, being manipulative and scoring points by making purposely derailing Liz so that she forgets that I can say that, and Young Chomsky tallies that in his Jewish tally
the
thing.
The Book of Life.
The Book of Life.
And this has been TruAnon. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Jeffrey Epstein. Jeff.